Winter is coming. This one will be long. When winter does come, gods help us all if we're not ready.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. It's December. Can you guys believe it? We can't believe it. And it was quite a week for the first, I guess, week of December. Now, anyone who's new to the show, this is my friend Brent Johnson, the man behind the Dollar Milkshake Theory. My name is John Katsumita. Every week we come at you with our views on the markets, give you some hot takes on what's been going on. This is our full-length episode. We have other types of segments we do. This one's going to be a little bit longer than those other videos, but you can check them all out on our YouTube channel at Milkshakes Pod. Brent, let's talk about the week. I mean, I really felt like looking at all the stuff that was going on, this to me felt like one of the biggest weeks of the year.
Yeah, it kind of was. And it was a bit surprising to me, to be honest. I think the market has reacted correctly since the Fed meeting, which is now, a month ago? I guess 4 weeks ago now. But I just think the magnitude and the fervor with which the market has reacted to every little hint of dovishness has really gotten ahead of itself. And that's not to say that it can't go further. I kind of feel like we're at a place now where either we're going to jump higher or we're going to have a really hard pullback. I don't think we're just going to sit where we're at. So it was a very, very... it was a big week. I guess that's the best way to say it. Like you said, it was a big week.
So why don't you pick where we start? Because, how about this? Without getting into specific asset classes just yet, do you want to talk about the conversation or speech or conference Powell had where he was taken extremely dovish and that really kicked all of this off?
Well, yeah. And so... this is a good place to start because it kind of dovetails on what I was just talking about. You know, I think, again, coming out of the Fed meeting, I think Powell was dovish, but I don't think he was uber dovish. And, you know, his comments at Spelman College on Friday, again, he had it's not so much that he's overly dovish, it's just that he's had several opportunities to be excessively hawkish, and he hasn't been. And he has... And the market has said, when he has said it's something even slightly hawkish, the market has basically just shooed it away and said, yeah, right. And they're basically calling his bluff, or they think that he's bluffing. And it's not that they're necessarily wrong. I think it is likely that the Fed is done hiking. Now, I say likely because in a couple of weeks ago, I would have definitely said likely. But the market reaction, if the market keeps running away higher, then it's going to bring the option of hiking back onto the table. We've talked about this several times. The front running of the rate cuts removes the reason for the rate cuts, or it at least gives Powell more room to tighten more. And I think he's been pretty clear that a lot of the work, and he'll say things like by front end loading this, a lot of the work that we need to do has been done. And now just by sitting and waiting, the market will tighten. And, you know, he'll say things, we haven't seen all the effects of the rate hikes that we've already done yet. And people take that to mean that there will be no further hikes. And again, I think that's probably right. But what I also think the market then says is, okay, then that means the next move is a cut. And that's probably true, but I don't think it happens nearly as soon as the market seems to think. And in my opinion, the further the market goes higher, the less likely it becomes. So if the market continues to run higher into March, then we're not going to get a rate hike or a rate cut in March. Now, if the market were to stay right where it is now and kind of trend sideways or even down a little bit into March, then yeah, you might get a rate cut. But the market, again, I think that it's directionally correct, but I think the magnitude has just gotten way ahead of itself. In other words, if the market had rallied 10% between the last Fed meeting, which was the beginning of November, and the end of January, then I would say, yeah, you know what? We may get a rate cut in March or April or May or sometime in Q2. But we're not even into, we just barely into December and the market's already up 10%. The Dow is up, I think, 10% since the Fed meeting. I think the NASDAQ's up like 15 or 20%. The S&P's up 12 or 13%. So again, you know, it's not that it's wrong. It's just, in my opinion, it's gotten ahead of itself. And I continue to hear so many people say the Fed is cornered. They'll say there's no way that the Powell can get a soft landing. But yet, he's done all these rate hikes. The VIX is at 13. Equities are at their all-time highs. And unemployment is low. So how is he not getting his soft landing? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, and this is where I think we're headed, is we're headed for either this magnificent blow-off top that then crashes back to the ground, because blow-off tops always crash back to the ground, or we're not going to get this these rate cuts that everybody thinks we're going to get. And so, you know, we're at a place now, John, you and I have talked about this all year, is that we've kind of gone violently sideways. But at this point now, markets are up pretty significantly. You know, as of the end of October, markets were basically flat for the year. The Russell was down for the year. The Dow was down for the year. S&P was up a couple of percent. The NASDAQ was still up quite a bit. But everything was pretty much flat to up slightly for the year. And now a month later, everything's up significantly for the year. Even bonds are up now, right? And so, you know, we've come so far in just a month that if we were to continue at this same pace for the next 2 or 3 months, there is absolutely no reason that Powell would need to cut. So I feel like I'm kind of repeating myself at this point, but I think that's where we're at. And I will say that I'm pretty uncertain what's going to happen now. I usually am happy to give my opinion, and I'll do it now too, but I don't know what's going to happen next. But I don't think we're just going to go sideways. And I don't think we're going to go sideways into the end of the year. We may end up at the same levels we are right now between now and the end of the year, but I don't think it's going to just flatline. I think we're going to have either a big up move and then a big down move, or a big down move and a big up move, but I don't think we're going to be flat. I think it's going to be a very volatile month, and I think it's probably going to be a volatile 5 to 6 months until we get to this period where everybody thinks we're going to have these first rate hikes. And when I say volatile, in both directions.
Well, I thought you were going to go towards this notion that it's been violently sideways all year, but we kind of broke out of that sideways trend and everything is just screaming higher. You did mention that, hey, it could be a potential blow off top, but maybe not. I feel like the bears are out there doing their best Rocky, you know, saying that I ain't hear no bell, you know? So here we are, you know, with this huge run up, but by the time we do a next episode, we could be back down to where we were before this run up, and then violently sideways gets to, you know, maintain the theme.
And listen, I'm going to hold up my hand, and, you know, I think all year, in fairness and in total transparency, I've been too bearish this year. But as of a month ago, that bearishness was correct, right? The market ran up early part of the year. I said, I think we're going to have a pullback. We got it in October. And I remember I said, I think at the end of October, I said, it wouldn't be surprised if we have a 2 month rally or a two week rally, but we've had a 4 week rally. So again, directionally, I think it's the right move, but I just think the magnitude has been too much. And I think when you're wrong, you just say you're wrong, right? And I think the bulls have been largely correct this year. The bears have been largely wrong this year. Now we've still got a month left. We could be right back where we were at the end of October, at the end of December. And like I said, I don't know what it's going to be, but I don't think we're just going to go sideways into the end of the year. And I think, you know, we've highlighted this several times. When markets are at their highs and when sentiment is at their highs, that's probably not the best. If you've been sitting on the sidelines, that's probably not the best time to jump in. You know, the put-call ratio is now, we highlighted this a couple weeks ago, it's now back at the lows again. You know, it was at the highest it had ever been a year ago, and now it's at the lowest it's been all year. And so, you know, it just feels like it feels like we're going to have a big move one way or the other. And if it goes higher, then I would not be buying this breakout, because you always get a pullback. Whenever you get a big breakout, you always get an opportunity for it to come back. And we've had a big breakout over the last month, and maybe it lasts another month, but I would be very careful about chasing it higher right now.
I'm sure you'll get some comments saying that you're just coping, but we'll...
I probably am. I probably am. But, you know, I've been doing it long enough that I know when FOMO starts to hit, that's the last time you should jump in.
Well, look, you've made the point here in this start to this conversation and many others that, you know, the reaction is good, the magnitude is wrong, and that as long as the market keeps creating this frothiness, this fervor, the FOMO that's pushing asset prices up higher, there's no reason for the Fed to cut. And to me, it feels like even before this recent move, but just all year, it kind of felt like the attitude that the Fed had to cut because they were raising, right? That they always get it wrong, and rate hikes always lead to rate cuts. I think one of the pieces from that narrative that was consistently missing and still is from this animal spirits reaction lately, particularly to Powell's comments, is that those rate cuts happen after some sort of crisis. So it's interesting to me, and you had commented on this, but right now the March rate cut odds, and I'm assuming this is based off of Fed funds futures, is now showing an 80% chance of a cut in March. And to me, it's like, well, basically what the market's in theory is predicting is some sort of something blowing up. So the last thing you'd do is jump into the market aggressively.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons why they would cut in March, and I guess this is probably a good time to kind of address this. Is there's a negative reason why they could be cutting March. In other words, if things get really bad between now and March, and markets sell off, volatility rises for whatever reason, and credit starts to tighten, the dollar goes higher, then they probably cut. Right. And that would be but that would mean there's some pain out there that's causing them to cut. The other thing that could cause them to cut, and so that would be a negative reason to cut. The other reason, though, that's less less painful and could develop. So again, you never say never. And this is the soft landing, is that if we move forward in time, markets have gone higher, but not dramatically higher. And unemployment has stayed low, but real rates, CPIs continues to fall, and rates are just too high. And so they may cut just because rates are now too high for where inflation's at. And so, and in that scenario, that could actually be a bullish thing, right? And so, and that's the soft landing. I think the odds of the soft landing are low, just like a lot of other people think that the odds of the soft landing are low, but I don't think they're impossible. So I think you have to be open to that. And I think the other thing that I want to say here is I don't want people to confuse me as being a perma bear, because I'm not. When I first started talking about all this stuff back in 2018, I said that equity is going to go much higher in the years ahead. Just the other day, I tweeted out that I think the Dow's going to 50,000. I think the S&P's going to 6,000. But you have to understand, what are the conditions that would allow that to happen? Well, typically, you need some kind of fuel to push prices higher or push stocks higher. And one of the things that you need is you need people that are very bearish. Well, right now, people are not extremely bearish right now, or at least positioning's not very bearish. But if we were to have a pullback, a hard pullback, maybe harder than what we had in September, maybe hard and maybe cause a little bit of pain, and now everybody's on the short side, and then the Fed cuts, and maybe they even go back to QE, that could send the market higher. And I think, for all the reasons that we've talked about with the U.S. and the U.S. dollar being the port in the storm and capital flowing into it, I think that we're going to see much higher equity prices in the years ahead. I just don't think that we're going straight there from here. Now, can I be wrong? I can absolutely be wrong. And that's why I am long equities. And so even though I've made money over the last month, I'm a little confused by it, and I don't think it's going to last. But if I can make money while I'm being wrong, I'm happy to do that. And so that's where I'm sitting here trying to figure out what, you know, we've had an okay year, not a great year. We're long equities, we're long gold, you know, but where does it go from here? And I'm not ready to just throw caution to the wind and say, okay, the worst is behind, they're going to cut, it's smooth sailing from here. That's what the market's saying. I'm not in that camp right now.
Yeah, I still I get your point about, although it's not your base case, what a soft landing might look like. To me, we're not even close to either one of these situations and the market's already ripping higher. If we got to the point where on the premise that, you know, real rates were getting much higher because where the Fed was positioned versus inflation, that for some reason was justification to take, you know, loosen the noose a little bit, I can only imagine what markets would do. That's why I kind of feel like the thing that causes rate cuts is something dramatic, and yep. There's such an absence of fear, and yep. And there's something that needs to completely grip the market and turn this thing into almost a panic where the Fed can cut without creating the very environment they're creating right now just by saying the wrong words. Now, you're also talking about, you know, long-term or even in the, I mean, long-term could be 10 years, it could be the next 2 years. You can see markets going much, much higher, but you feel like it's going to require more of a bearish sentiment. Now, can you explain why? Is that short covering? Is it because, you know, bull momentum eventually, or a bull market eventually loses steam and momentum and just needs to kind of rebalance? Where is the bearish aspect of that necessary to push to new all-time highs?
In the normal circumstance, you wouldn't necessarily need to have a panic lower that and to give you the fuel to rocket higher. But because we are where we are in the big picture of the global kind of super debt cycle, I don't feel like we have enough global growth to just grow at 10 to 20%, you know, or for equities to rise 10 to 20% a year for the next 2 or 3 years with no problems. And if we didn't have the debt problems that we have around the world, if we didn't have the geopolitical problems we have around the world, if we didn't have the inflation problems that we have around the world, then I'd say, yeah, then there's, why couldn't you grow 10 or 15, 20% a year for the next couple of years and get the Dow 6,000 without having a pullback along the way? But I just don't think that's the type of world that we're in. Now, so while I can't rule it out, that's just not my base case. And I feel like, because of all the debt in the world, and because interest rates are where they are, and because, as Powell himself has said, when Powell says the full effects of what we have done have not been felt yet, that is him saying there is more pain coming, right? And so when the market, like, basically does the exact opposite of what he says is coming, they're basically calling his bluff. And again, I understand why they're doing it, but I think they're wrong. Now, can I be wrong? Of course I can be wrong. But that's the idea. It's like, this is my point, is I don't think they're actually listening to what Powell's saying. I think they're hearing what they want to hear. And while I think he is saying there's probably no more rate hikes, he is not saying we are going to have cuts. That doesn't mean there won't be cuts, but he is not saying that. But that's what the market is hearing, because typically, I think the first rate cut typically comes 8 months after the last hike. So 8 months after the last hike is like the March or April timeframe. And so I think that's why the market is pricing in like 80% by March and like 100% by June or something like that. And so, but again, if we don't have pain between now and March, why on earth would he cut? I try as much as I can, especially in an environment like this where emotions typically run markets anyway. You know, I mean, that people need to realize that markets typically run on emotion. And when they run really hard, they typically run on high emotion. So whenever a market is all running on high emotion, I try to be as logical as possible, because I get caught up in the emotions too. And so whenever I feel myself getting caught up in the emotion, that's when I step back and I just try to be uber logical. And so when I listen to what he's actually saying and be logical about what's the steps that would have to happen in order for him to cut, I get to the much more likely reason for him to cut is pain as opposed to the benign reason that we were talking about. And so that's why I lean towards him either not cutting or there has to be pain in order for him to cut. So we'll see.
Well, I was going to ask you, you did say, you made a comment about, you know, the market interpreting him wrong a few times now in this conversation, but I was going to double down on that topic specifically by asking who's wrong, because between more or less the bond market, which had a huge rally. I mean, really, it's been a month-long thing, but the last 2 weeks and even this week. So it's been the best month since 2008 for bonds. And despite endless amounts of banter about bond bloodbaths and everything else, and we've certainly had used that narrative here, many of the bond indexes are now positive on the year, which is such a wild turnaround. And so now for me, when I'm looking at the bond market, there's two components. There's a short end and the long end. I feel like they have been moving in the same direction for different reasons. The Fed is raising rates because of inflation, but that monetary policy feels like it has more of a direct impact on the short end. The long end, I feel like, moves more specific, not so much what the Fed policy is doing, but what they're reacting to. So the long end is trying to get ahead of inflation, which the Fed did a poor job of controlling. So if you've got this big rally, I mean, it's across the entire curve, but for me to see the long end do what it's doing, it's, to me, that's a, they're sending a signal that they're not worried about inflation anymore. Yes, Powell said certain things that were dovish. This means rate cuts could be in the future. But I think the long end is moving more on the idea that there's inflation's now in the rear view mirror. But when you look at what gold did, you know, moving to an all-time high, stocks up 19% so far for the year, you know, big move this week. Who's wrong there? And I think particularly between gold and bonds, because I think they're moving for two different reasons. One's kind of, you know, inflationary monetary policy, call it somewhat dovish. And I feel like bonds are reacting to something more of a hawkish environment.
Well, to me, the long end is now saying that rate cuts are done. And I think to a certain extent, to me, the long end is saying that we're probably going to have either, not necessarily like a crisis, but more pain, right? And therefore yields are coming back down and, you know, bonds are being bought. And so again, I think I hate it when people say the markets are wrong. If I said the markets are wrong earlier, then I'm the one that's wrong. The markets are always right. Now you can think you can think they're not going to continue to be right, but as of right now, the market is right. Right. And so I think you got to be very careful about saying the market is right or the market is wrong. But I would say that if you think that the markets can never be wrong in the future, then why would you ever invest? The whole point of investing is because you think that the market's going one way while everybody else thinks the market's going another way. And if the markets are always perfect, then there would be no point in speculating. And that's what we all do. That's what we are. We're all speculators. We're all trying to figure out what's going on in the future. And so I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, rather than always trying to be right, of course, I like to be right. Of course I do. But rather than always trying to be right, I just always try to be prepared. And so I try to think what could happen between now and let's call it next Q2, right? Over the next 5 to 7 months. And one is that interest rates could continue to fall. Rate hikes could be over and everything continue, you know, the markets hold up and the dollar falls, bonds rally, or at least, you know, as interest rates continue to fall, bonds hold up and gold probably goes higher in that. And, you know, when the dollar falls, that's typically good for global markets because as the dollar falls, that provides more liquidity. And as the more liquidity, asset prices go higher, right? There's no, when you have plenty of liquidity, there is no crisis. And the powers that be have done a great job of kicking the can down the road over the last 3 years, over the last 5 years, over the last 15 years, over the last 30 years. So for me to sit here and say they can't kick the can down the road another 6 months, I would never be so arrogant to say they can't do that. So I am prepared for the dollar to fall, for liquidity to stay ample, and for markets to kind of go up and to the right over the next 6 to 9 months. And that's not my base case, but I'm prepared for it. The other thing is that the market is maybe factually correct on what's going to happen, but it's gotten way ahead of itself. And maybe there will be a crisis of some sort, whether it comes out of the United States or Japan or Europe or China or Gaza or Israel or Turkey. You know, there are numerous places where some kind of a credit event or some kind of a crisis could happen, which could then, you know, piggyback onto other things and you get a little bit of contagion. And I just think that that's more likely than the soft landing into next, May to June time period. And if that does happen, then the taller dollar probably goes higher. Credit probably tightens. Asset prices probably come down. And we don't necessarily get this, benign and, soft landing that everybody seems to now think that we're going to get. And so I'm prepared for both of those scenarios. I lean towards the more volatile one, but I'm prepared for the other one. The other thing that I would say is sentiment now is very high. It's high in equities. It's high in gold. It's risen dramatically in bonds. I don't know. I'd go so far as say it's high, but sentiment is much higher in bonds today than it was a month ago. And it's not that you don't want, it's not that you necessarily always have to invest when sentiment is really low and get it at a low and have things go higher, but you typically don't want to put all your money in when sentiment is at its peak either, right? Like gold and silver, now the sentiment is very high on gold and silver. It's getting pretty high on equities again. And so even if I want to be in those assets, if you're putting new money to work, you typically want to wait for that sentiment to come back a little bit or some kind of a pullback. There's a million different ways to make money. And if people are very good at buying breakouts, then good for them. That's not what I do. When something breaks out, I will typically let it run. And then when it pulls back, if I need to add, I'll add on a pullback. But I do not think that this is a time to be, if you've been sitting on the sideline waiting for a time to get involved, I don't think this is the time to do that for all the reasons that we've just talked about.
Now, you use technical analysis, I think, mainly to tell a story. You're not day trading, yep, using, charts as your main justification for taking a position or adding to a position. But there has been, from a technical view standpoint, this so-called triple top in gold. Does that mean anything to you? I mean, even though, again, you're not using technical analysis as voodoo, but are you looking at that and being like, this is showing that the market just can't make that break?
Well, it can make. So I think the chart on gold is an extremely bullish chart if we break through kind of right where we're at. I kind of feel like gold is probably going to make an all-time high sometime in the next couple of weeks. And then I think, I don't know, and I'm glad I already own gold. I've owned gold forever. I'm glad I don't have to buy it right now because I don't like buying these breakouts. My guess is that it'll pull back in Q1. And so even if it goes to 22 or 2300 sometime in the next, let's call it month or 2 or 3 weeks, I wouldn't buy gold then. I would wait for it to pull back in January, February, March, pull back to 2100 or 2000 or 1900 or whatever it is and buy it there. And here's the reason is everything. Number one, there is nobody calling gold to break out right now that didn't also call it for it the last three times that it didn't. Okay. Nobody has been sitting on the sideline for the last 20 years and just bought gold in October, timed it perfectly, and now it's going through a 2000 and they have all these reasons to buy gold now. All the reasons to buy gold now are the same reasons to buy it in 2022 and 2021 and 2020 and 2015 and 2010 and all these other, So the story for gold is not new. And I am so bullish gold long term that, you know that I'm a closet gold bug. But if you look at gold right now, if we have the dollar fall over the next 3 or 4 months and interest rates go down over the next 3 or 4 months, gold will probably be at $2,300, $2,500. That's not my base case for all the reasons that we just discussed. The other thing is that if you look at the sentiment on gold now, it's very, very high. If you look at the positioning on gold, it's not super bearish, but it's not super bullish either. And if gold does make it to an all-time high, let's say it makes it to an all-time high in the next 2 or 3 weeks, then sentiment is going to be uber bullish. The positioning will be bearish. And then that will be a reason for a pullback, in my opinion. Now, I know there's people out there saying, Brent, you say this all the time. How can you say you're a gold bull when you always say gold's going to pull back? And I would just say, listen, if I've said it's always going to pull back, hasn't it always pulled back? I mean, if it's been at this level 4 times over the last 3 or 4 years and we haven't broken through, haven't I been correct to say it's going to pull back? Now, I'm the first to admit, maybe I'm wrong this time. Maybe it'll bust through that and maybe we'll be at 2,300 or 2,500, in which case I'm fine with that. I'm fine being wrong and having gold go higher. I'm just telling the people listening all the reasons why this is a time where gold has typically pulled back. All the signs that told me gold was going to pull back the last 3 times are present again now. And so I don't ignore those signs that told me last time. Can I be wrong? I can absolutely be wrong. Can I be wrong on equities? I can absolutely be wrong. You know, the other thing, John, is I would say is most people, you know, I'm obviously known for my views on the dollar, and people think that I'm just uber long the dollar. But the reality is that my portfolio is short the dollar. Yeah. People are like, what? You're the long dollar guy. But I own equities. I own gold. All our clients own real estate. We own commodities. That is because assets go up and to the right and fiat currency loses value over the time. So that means my portfolio is predominantly short the dollar. It's even more short other currencies. But if you are long assets, you're short the currency that underlies it because you think it's going to go up relative to the value of the currency. But because I understand what a rising dollar versus other foreign currencies, how that affects prices in the markets, I always have some kind of a protection or a hedge, or I'm ready for a pullback in asset prices because of what the dollar will do. And I just feel like one of the most underappreciated risks out there is the possibility of a rapidly rising dollar. And here's the reason. And I know people are saying, but Brent, the dollar went to 100, it rallied to 106, and now it's back at 103. And it fell hard on Powell's comments on Friday. And it fell hard after the Fed meeting a month ago. And it's true. It did. But here's part of the reason that it has fallen. Part of the reason it fell earlier in the year was the expectation that rate cuts were going to happen and that other countries around the world were going to raise rates. And that's still the reason now. But what happened over the last week is the dollar went down to like 102.5. And then we had inflation data out of Europe come. And it fell lower than people expected, which reduced the likelihood of rate hikes in Europe. Currencies trade relative to each other. So now a lot of the reason that the dollar's been falling is because rate cuts in the United States would make the dollar less valuable versus the euro. But if Europe is going to now have rate cuts as well, it removes that reason for the dollar to fall. And I think that's very possible to see around the world as well. In other words, you're not going to have a situation where rate cuts start happening in the U.S. and they don't happen anywhere else. Now, typically, the Fed does lead. So it's very possible the Fed cuts first, but you're not going to have a situation where the Fed is dramatically cutting interest rates and Europe is raising rates. You're not going to have a situation where the Fed moves to easy monetary policy and China moves to tight monetary policy. That's just not the way the world is set up right now with all the debt in the world. And so it's for those reasons, and because I still think it's possible that we get a dollar that rises much more rapidly than the market is pricing in, I have to be cautious on the assets that I own, especially when the sentiment on the assets that I own are extremely high. That's just, again, that's removing the emotion in the markets and being hyper-logical about what could potentially happen.
And one of the aspects of the dollar milkshake theory is that both dollar and gold will rise together because of that relative world argument. But let's assume, at least just for a wrap up here, that the next 6 to 12 months is not the end game and not the final chapter of the dollar milkshake theory, where we have this rapid rise in the dollar and gold because the entire world is crumbling. The risk here is, and the message for everyone to be careful, is that yes, a falling dollar lifts asset prices, but if we have some sort of crisis that actually does drive the Fed to cut, not for soft landing reasons, but for bailing out the market reasons, in that knee jerk moment, it's very frequent that investors sell the most liquid thing, which is gold. So, you know, the baby goes out with the bathwater. So even in a crisis where the dollar is to some extent weak, you may also see a big pullback in gold just because people are trying to raise liquidity from the one thing that there's always a market for.
That's right. And, you know, I've said this before, but a lot of people tend to think that the dollar milkshake means that in the next 6 months, that I am constantly predicting that in the next 6 months, the dollar is going to spike and we're going to have this big blow up and it's all going to be over. This is going to take another 4, 5, 6 years to play out. There's going to be times where the dollar runs higher. There's going to be times where the dollar runs lower. There's going to be times where equities rally. There's going to be times where they sell off. There's going to be times where gold rallies. There's going to be time where it sells off. And, you know, this is going to be a back and forth thing. And I think this is going to last a lot longer than a lot of people think. I don't think this is like an in-game scenario in the next 6 to 12 months. And then we're through the fourth turning and now we're back to the spring. I think this is going to be a long fourth quarter. And, you know, we're going to be up and we're going to be down. And, you know, I've said this several times, but I'm going to say it again, especially in case there's anybody new listening. Is just because I say I think this is going to happen or this is going to rise or this is going to fall, it doesn't mean that I'm buying that or selling that. Again, our assets are pretty sticky. We don't really change our asset allocation that much. So if I say gold is going to fall, that doesn't mean I'm selling gold. It doesn't mean I'm telling everybody to go out and short gold. It just means I'm not expecting the gold that we already own to pay off in a huge way over the next 6 months. Now, if it does, that's great. I'll be totally fine with that. Same thing with equities. If equities go higher, and I'm not telling everybody that they need to sell all their equities right now and just sit in cash. I'm just saying be prepared for them to pull back because they've come a long way in a month. And so I think it's really important to differentiate between giving a forecast of where you think things are going and what that necessarily means that you should be trading your portfolio. I think it's just trying to figure again. It's rather than trying to be right about everything, trying to just be prepared for everything and try to understand what are the different conditions that would have to happen to cause Powell to cut rates? What are the different things that would have to happen for the dollar to fall? What are the different things that would have to happen for gold to continue to rise? And try to be prepared for all of those. And if you do that, your portfolio will go up and to the right and it will avoid significant drawdowns. Or at least, it doesn't mean you won't have any drawdowns, but you won't have the big 20, 30, 40% drawdowns that come when there's a surprise shock that comes out of nowhere because people weren't ready for it. And that's really kind of what my whole framework is about. It's really what the dollar milkshake is about. And it's really part of what you and I always talk about and why we started this show to begin with, is just to share our thoughts with people that want to tune in.
It's been a great chat so far, and it's been a great journey for us the first year with the Milkshakes Markets Madness show. We're almost to the end of the year, but not quite there. Coming up this week, there's quite a bit happening. There's PMI, ISM, all these important data points that kind of give us an indicator of where the economy is going. But probably the biggest thing, especially with everything that's been transpiring from asset price standpoint and certainly the sentiment or tone coming out of the Fed is the employment figure. So we start in midweek Wednesday with ADP, and then Friday consumer sentiment. As we talked about here, sentiment really drives sentiment and emotion really drive everything. And then to cap the week off is the colossal non-farm payroll. So I should say the Titan non-farm payroll. By the way, everybody, the final episode of Attack on Titan is now out. So make sure you go watch that. So there you go. There's the kind of the week ahead of what we'll be looking at. And I think Brent and I will pop on here at some point midweek with an update if things get really spicy. But otherwise, you know, everybody enjoy your weekend. Brent, before we kind of let everyone know where they can find you and where they can find the show across the internet, is there anything else you want to share about this past week?
No, you know, I think it's been just a really cool week. It's a really kind of a cool time period. It's kind of fun. It's kind of scary. It's kind of why I like markets. Like, I love markets like this. Even when I'm wrong, I love markets because it's just this big puzzle you have to try to figure out. And so, you know, I know I've mentioned this several times and I tweeted this out the other day, and I literally have a piece of paper that's taped to my monitor, and I've had this for 15 years, and it's the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. And it's so perfect. Like, and I read it all the time because it keeps me grounded when all this madness is going on. And so if anybody is out there and has never read the poem If by Rudyard Kipling, I recommend you go read it, print it out, put it in your wallet, tape it to your monitor, stick it to your wall, put a magnet on it on your refrigerator. Because I think if you kind of can internalize what that says, it's going to help you get through the next 12 months.
Well, there you go. Some sage advice for you before we rally off of this crazy week into another one. If you want to share your thoughts on Brent's poem selections, you can do that on Twitter by finding him at Santiago AU Fund. You can find me on Twitter. I mean, I guess everyone's calling it X. Everyone's trying to adapt to the new name, but let's be honest, it's Twitter. You can find me there, John Kutzmita. You can find this show on Twitter and on YouTube with the Milkshakes Pod handle. We really encourage you to, if you're watching this for the first time or you've kind of tuned in occasionally, jump over to the channel homepage. I think it's nicely organized there for you so you can kind of explore the content. Everything's broken up into very specific playlists. So if you're looking for a specific conversation or maybe you want to go a little deeper into one of those topics, I think the channel is set up in a way where it'll assist you in navigating all of the videos we've done. This is going to be number 94. So it's been a busy, busy year. We appreciate everyone who's joined us throughout the year and throughout season one. Season two is going to be very, very exciting. We have some stuff in the works, so stay tuned for that. And that'll do it for Milkshakes Markets Madness. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you real soon.
Sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland.
This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.